TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Yes, it is. Raised by Wolves, another edition. Danny Cunningham and Dane Moore in with you on this Tuesday afternoon. And we finally have some Timberwolves news as the search for a new president of basketball operations finally seems to be moving on, Dane.
Yeah, Michael Winger is the name that's been thrown out. Maybe not obviously. He's in the front office in Los Angeles with the Clippers. Mm-hmm. It's been a multi-head attack kind of there. I think they have Jerry West is, I don't want to say he's just a figurehead, but he's there. There's also Lawrence Frank, who mm-hmm. is a coaching name people might recognize. And then Winger's been in the mix there, too. I guess you could say Doc Rivers, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's been an interesting dynamic out in L.A. for the past couple of years, because obviously Doc Rivers was the president of basketball operations, and then they kind of removed him but didn't fire him as coach, and things have actually gone really well, which I think could have caught a lot of people by surprise just because transitions like that don't happen. But this is a name, if you're a Wolves fan, I think is very encouraging that this that the franchise, one, asked to interview him, two, got permission, and three, is actually moving forward with it, because we've seen this franchise so many times swing and miss in this kind of situation, and this is absolutely the kind of name that needed to be tied in here.
Right, and I think for me most encouraging is kind of in talking to some people around the league in back in January when Tibbs was fired, as the assumption was in time a new GM, Pobo, is going to be coming in. Winger's name was one that came up like right away as of those guys that they know, and that was much more speculative at the time. They were like, well, he's just high quality.
That was more so guys that you think at this point, okay, he probably deserves to take another mm-hmm. step up. He's probably...
I just like that it was... Our table just raised up. Raised by Wolves. The table has been raised. And of course, is right when we're actually talking about something important.
I think that's probably a name that, well, he's someone that deserves to be elevated in his position, and he's really earned the opportunity to run a franchise, which he's the GM in LA, but he's not running that franchise.
Right. And so, as Danny, you and I have talked about this before, it's really hard to assess executives.
We don't know the
inner workings of what the heck is going on.
Like even right now, we don't know who to attribute 100% who to attribute drafting Josh Okogie and Cade Bates to.
Someone
deserves credit, but we don't know who gets all of that credit or how that credit gets broken down, because that's a very tough thing to evaluate.
And in the multi-head front offices where you kind of have the president and the GM, who do you assign it to? Obviously the Tibbs and Layden being an example. Do you put all the blame of what's happened on Tibbs? Do you put it on Layden? Like,
what about scouts? I mean, all these things
exactly
play into it, and it's not ever the success or failures of one person.
I just trust that the other people that I've talked to in other front office positions, when they brought him up saying this guy's high class, I was like, okay, now you actually have information that I don't. And then a week ago, last Monday or Tuesday, when Woj tweeted out that they're going to be back, and then John Kay was like, well, I don't know, hold on, there's the Pobo.
That was the night of their final home game.
Yes. Because
of course it was.
And again, I heard that Winger was another name, was the name that came up again. If they were to leave the quote-unquote country club of the Chauncey Billups, whoever, you know, those
people
guys
that have connections
here
to the Wolves, to this franchise, to Glenn Taylor, because I can't find one for Michael Winger.
Yes.
I don't think there is one.
I don't think there is at all. And so I think that's encouraging. And it, when you talk about the need for a cultural reset, if that's something you believe you need, the best thing you can do is put a completely new, smart, fresh face at the top of, you know, the top of the chart. And I think if I'm a Wolves fan, I'm excited about that. Who knows? Maybe 3 years from now, Michael Winger's been Pobo and things didn't go well.
Sure, very possible. But I think that this is a good start. And
I think so.
Michael Winger, I would assume, is not going to be the last name we hear. I think my thinking here is that this search has started off slow in the public eye, at least, because I do think that they have their... One, I think they've been doing a lot of back-channel stuff. And two, I think they've had their eyes on a lot of guys that are involved with playoff teams. And there's a little bit of a process to get
going.
Stuff
has been happening.
But there's a little bit of a process to get going with those types of things. Like, the report today is not that Michael Winger has interviewed for the position. It's that the Clippers gave the Wolves permission to talk to him.
Exactly.
Because that has to happen.
And for a lot of teams, is I've just actually coming over here, my friend was like, well, the only other team really who has an open spot is the Wizards. So right now, like, that's really the only other place he could go. And I was like, well, hold on, let's wait. It's not like GMs haven't been fired after their teams have been knocked out of the playoffs. Like,
oh, yeah.
There's still 16 teams playing right now. There's plenty of churning yet to happen in the NBA front office realm. So,
like, for instance, say OKC comes back and wins that series in five.
Yeah.
It wouldn't shock me if there's some sort of change in Portland. That might make sense. I'm not saying there will or won't, but it would make sense if it did.
Similar things have happened in the past.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah.
So I think it's a good thing that they're reaching out to wingers. Is there anyone else that maybe is on your list of guys you would like to see them reach out to for this president of basketball operations?
I read your thing, and it's like, it's all those names. I mean, you nail the names down of, like, the guys that are sexy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But I don't know. Like, we can go and comb through, Boston has a really good roster, and Mike Zarin has had some really good, like, quotes and stuff in the past.
And
I don't know. Like,
I think the biggest
so
thing with him for me is that he's been around a bunch of really smart people.
Yeah.
Like we just talked about with Winger and Doc Rivers being one of them. Well, Zarin's been around Doc Rivers, who was obviously the coach in Boston. He's been around Danny Ainge his entire career. Brad Stevens is thought of as a really, really smart basketball person. So I think that is something that really entices me about him personally.
I was at one of the last games of the season. I sit by Britt Robson of The Athletic and Andy Grimsrud who's Punch Drunk Wolves on Twitter, if you guys know who that is. And they both go, you know what? I just want the new GM or Pobo to be someone I've never heard of, because then that means it's a very smart person who has done awesome things elsewhere that is coming in, and I'm ready to be excited about it. And it's not just... I'm not just excited because it's Chauncey Billups and I liked him on the Timberwolves 15 years ago. Like, I'm with that too. Like, the names that you don't see that much are often the smartest.
Yes.
And it's a tricky job to take over the Timberwolves president of basketball operations opening right now. And it's probably got to be a brilliant dude.
Yeah,
and,
I agree.
Yeah.
This is not an easy fix, and I think that you're going to need someone that is, one, going to be smart, and two, going to get creative. And what's encouraging about Winger is the Clippers have been both of those things over the past couple of years. They've traded their best player three times and made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that doesn't happen normally. You have to be really smart and really creative for that to happen, and that's exactly what has happened with them, and that's really encouraging.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning architectural shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
How about that Clippers game last night?
So, okay. I fell asleep.
Yeah.
And I don't think I was alone. They were up. The Warriors were up by 31. I don't think I'm wrong for falling asleep there.
It's so worth going back to watch on League Pass.
I will do that at some point today or tomorrow, or at some point I will watch that. But I fell asleep.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I'm in the wrong for it.
I watched the first half, went to bed, and then watched it, woke up and saw that it happened. I watched the second half when I woke up in the morning. And even knowing the result of the game, it was like a very, very fun second half to watch play out. And that's been such a part of the Clippers' identity this season. I don't know how many 20-point margins or how many times they came back by 20 points, but I think it was they actually had like three straight games where they did that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure during the regular season.
It was like, when they were here.
Yeah.
They were here during that stretch. I think the Wolves actually beat them to end that stretch. I want to say that's correct because I know they played twice here. They split, I want to say. But they had come back against Boston, they had come back against Detroit, and they had come back against someone else. But mm-hmm. they had this really impressive run where you're like, okay, they're done, and then they find a way. And
yeah.
that was even more unbelievable.
I mean, a testament to them, particularly when you're at Oracle
and yeah.
playing the Warriors. I mean, to be able – that's a whole nother level. But the thing was in the game is they were making shots in the first half too. It's just that the Warriors were making threes and making even more. Like it was just the crazy Warriors. And then through irritation of Kevin Durant by Pat Bev, it was – they just – it inspired a comeback, and Steph Curry in the third quarter picked up an offensive foul on Beverly, and where Steph committed it, and it was his fourth offensive foul, and then he had to sit out mm-hmm. the rest of the quarter, and they went on a 31-14 run, the Clippers did, the rest of that third quarter. And then you look at the fourth quarter, and Beverly is, obviously he fouled out eventually, yeah. but he was all up in Durant the whole time, and it looked so annoying to be Kevin Durant.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, it was, and I don't want to say all the credit goes to Beverly, because he's kind of like the face of it, trying to be the annoyer.
Well, I think that's infectious. Yeah. I think that attitude and that model of playing defense is infectious across the entire team. And that's not to say everyone on that roster is a good defender, because I'd be lying to you if I said that.
No, but you can then hide Lou Williams.
Yes.
Because you have all these guys who are willing to defend outside of their position and are able to do so somewhat effectively. And I think that is what help Lou Williams be able to totally take over the game at the end of the game. And I just think, like, a ton of credit to every one of those guys grinding. Harrell, and then really Beverly. He had just, it's like 7 minutes left in the game, and Steph Curry's just walking the ball up, and Beverly's there right at half court, like, ready to get at him. And he ripped him, and they went and got a layup, and it turned the game. It just absolutely turned the game.
And how impressive was it? Because I haven't seen the full second half, but I saw many of the highlights, so it's not as if the things you're talking about I haven't seen. But the play that the Clippers essentially won the game on, how impressive was it that it was two rookies?
It was
SGA to Landry Shamet to win the game.
And it was just like a very well-executed, you know, routine to go through. It's like you have SGA cutting to the nail, and then, you know, like, you're thinking in your head, okay, now I'm either catching it here and I'm going to the rim, or I'm looking for my weak side skip. And, like, for a rookie to be able to do that, to kick it to another rookie and have him hit that three, yeah, it was very impressive.
Let alone be able to do it, but to be able to do it in that spot.
Yeah.
Like, you are on the road against the team that has won three of the last four titles, that is infinitely more talented than you are. And they led by 31, and the clock's ticking down. And this is the biggest spot of your career, without question. And to be able to do that then, that's impressive.
Totally. It was weird, though, too. It had the vibe. And now, granted, I knew the Clippers were going to win. But there was these, like, the Warriors would come down, and they'd end up getting a pretty good look.
Mm-hmm.
And they just missed, like, three of those in the last couple minutes. It was like a one of those threes that Steph makes 40% of the time. I don't want to say it was open, but he missed that. And then the next possession, it's Clay, and he missed an open one.
Yeah.
And granted, though, credit to the Clippers, like, Montrezl Harrell grabs every one of those defensive rebounds. Plus, he then got fouled after those. It was a two-point, I think it was 133 to 131 at that point. He gets the defensive rebound, he's fouled, and he's like a big dude, 60% free throw shooter.
Yeah.
Like, and he steps to the line, again, at Oracle, and knocks both of those down to seal it.
The biggest spot of his career.
That was, I mean, it really was impressive, and it was one of those things like, okay, this looks like it's going to be nice by the Clippers. But you thought you were just a Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry dagger away from being like, nice try.
Because we've seen that so many times. The Warriors and other teams, too, that have built leads, like, maybe not that extensive, like, maybe not that big. Mm-hmm. But we've seen teams that have built leads and blown games, and then a team fights back really hard, and they get really close, and then the team that was winning all along hits a dagger, and it was all for naught. So we've seen that so many times, and I think that's something that, looking back just on my Twitter timeline, that everyone kind of expected to happen.
Yeah. And I think there was an element of the Warriors kind of off, not just missing. And the easy line to draw there is DeMarcus went down.
Yeah.
And it looked bad. And as Steve Kerr was talking about it in his, like, end of the third quarter interview, and he was just like, I'm not even thinking about the game. Like, it's really hard to think about the game.
Sure.
We're also concerned about DeMarcus. And everyone was entering the season concerned about DeMarcus being a distraction. Not in this way, but
no.
It appears that he was a distraction in this game.
Through really no fault of his own.
No.
Like, that's not his fault. It's a freak thing. And
no, he made a great steal, and he was going after the ball, and he just stepped right on it.
His quad gave up. His quad just kind of split.
So in regards to that, I've seen, you know, some people, and this is mostly through Twitter or whatever, you know, talking about how Cousins didn't necessarily move the needle for them during the regular season and help them. And the suggestion is, well, I don't think that DeMarcus Cousins was an important factor of them winning this championship.
Mm-hmm.
I get that to some degree, because then people go, I don't know, you could, no, just give it to Durant, Clay, Steph more. But I do think it's important. I think you go, now it's Andrew Bogut and Kevon Looney.
Yeah.
Who, yes, they're not going to take the same shots that Cousins did, but you're probably going to increase their usage some, and that's not as good of an offensive weapon as DeMarcus was.
It's not, but I think, contrary to that, now you can increase the usage of that Hamptons 5 lineup that is Curry, Iguodala, Draymond, Clay, and Kevin Durant, and not have to worry about hurting someone's feelings, because whether or not we want to talk about that, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
You can absolutely now close every game with that, run that in your biggest spots, and that's been your best lineup. So in the lineups with DeMarcus weren't the Warriors' best lineups.
That's true.
I think that part of me really thinks that the likelihood of them winning the title, which was already really high, went up a little bit with Cousins getting injured, because you don't have to worry about that now.
Yeah.
Now you can go back to being the same Warriors that have already won two titles. You can be that exact thing again for the most part.
I think an interesting part of that game, and what I, you know, before the injury noted, was Iguodala looks healthy and like playoff Iggy.
He is so good at just flipping a switch, isn't he?
He really is.
Because there are so many nights, if you watch the Warriors during the regular season, where you're just like, man, he's looking old. He just looks like he doesn't have it anymore. But when he wants to turn it on, it is still there.
It really is. And the good thing is even without DeMarcus, it doesn't need to be a 35-minute role for him.
No,
like,
no.
They have other competent players that they can fill it in there with. And like, Looney is helpful at times for them too. Like, they can get through their center minutes. I'm not worried about that. Like, Bogut is a really good screen setter, and he'll use a lot of fouls, but he also had some big blocks in the fourth quarter of the game last night. So it definitely doesn't deter me from picking the Warriors to win the championship and to come out of the East. I think they have a very easy path to get there. But I do fall in the boat that I think they, and I think this is an unpopular opinion, that they would have been better had they had DeMarcus, provided that they were able to take care of the personality elements of it that you bring up.
And I don't know that chemistry that you need was ever there with that group.
Yeah.
I don't know that it ever, obviously, that those five guys, when they were on the floor together, the most talented lineup that anyone in the NBA can throw out there, without question.
Right.
But I don't know that it ever really worked the way that it needed to work. I think that there was always going to be some feeling as if they needed to try and force DeMarcus involved. And
I just think it's a good weapon to have in your bag.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no questioning that. I'm never going to argue that with you.
Right.
I anytime you can add an all-star at that position where you didn't have one, you're going to be better for it, because it's always another way to bail you out. It's another weapon to have, like you just said. But I think that now they'll look more like the Warriors that we've been used to seeing over the past couple of years than the Warriors that we've seen since January until last night.
Be interesting to see how many games the series goes.
I picked Warriors in four. I didn't think there was any chance that last night when I went to bed, I didn't think there was any chance that happened. And so who
looked
knows
like
now.
Looked like a fine pick through six quarters.
Yeah, exactly. It looked like, there's no way I'm wrong. But I don't know.
I'm frustrated. I know this isn't a new take. I'm just frustrated how the seedings played out.
Like, yeah.
In having watched the Oklahoma City and Portland game and then also the Denver and San Antonio game, none of those teams look like a team that should be in the Western Conference Finals, and one of them has to.
Yeah, it's that side of the bracket is not what I wanted it to be.
Who do you think it's going to be?
That's the thing. I have no idea. I could
That's
see.
That's kind of fun, though.
It is. It is. I'm not saying it's not fun. I'm saying we're not going to get the best Western Conference Finals matchup that we could possibly get. Mm-hmm. I think that that side of the bracket's going to be infinitely more fun than anything else in the playoffs because we just have no idea, and we haven't had that for some time. Like last year in the West, we knew Golden State was coming out of the two side of the bracket, and we knew Houston was coming out of the one side. There was no question about that. But now we have no idea who a Western Conference playoff team is going to be, and it hasn't been like that for a while.
I'm excited to watch the Denver-San Antonio game tonight.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to overreact to one game and be like, well, Denver isn't the second best team. But we do have an 82-game regular season that suggests
that they
were up there.
The thing that kind of worries me is you could probably make the case that Denver outplayed San Antonio and just didn't hit enough shots.
Yeah. Was it 6 of 28 from 3 or something like that?
Yeah, and they're down 1-0 in the series. You could also make the case that that could very easily happen again tonight, and if they fall down 0-2 in that series, they're not coming back from that.
Yeah.
Especially a team like that who does not play well on the road.
Not good to have a must-win in game 2 of the first round.
Absolutely not, but that's where we're at.
Yeah, I just... Man... If the Spurs go to the Western Conference Finals, like...
But it's on the table.
I know.
It's very much on the table. I think it'd be a sweet story, and I think they'd get smoked by either Golden State or Houston because I think that series is going to be awesome next round.
Yeah.
But it's a fun story to think about. Wow, that Spurs team with DeMar DeRozan went to the Western Conference Final.
Yeah, right.
What a coaching job by Pop. That's how it would be looked back at it 10 years.
Aldridge, too. I mean, he's played well all year. I'm going to hold on to Denver for now.
Okay,
and,
that's fair.
Because I think it's close. Honestly, I think the Thunder are the least likely at this point. And I know, like, if we're having this conversation a month ago, that's a different story. But
it's just Paul George isn't right. And he is the most important player on that side of the bracket. Because if he were the Paul George that we saw prior to the All-Star break, I think it's OKC, no question, gets to the Western Conference Finals. But also, they're not the sixth seed if that's the case.
That's true. And that totally shakes everything up. But given that they aren't going to have home court I guess they would if they played the Spurs. I have been so unimpressed by the Thunder. And even in that game, I think that was a game they could have won, the game one against the Blazers, and they didn't. And
They were terrible shooting from three in that game, too. That was kind of a theme of the weekend, is that the teams that lost just could not find the range from behind the arc.
Well, and it's an interesting externality of this NBA that we live in now, where everyone's getting up all those threes, but the difficulty of shooting 30, 35 threes in the playoffs is up. It's harder to shoot that many, and I'm just on a very simple level, like, teams are contesting shots more aggressively.
Yeah.
Defense is more important, and I don't want to, like, jump on with, like, a players-only take, but, like, sometimes you do just need to, like, if the 2-point shot is there and it's one that the players are more comfortable in taking, like, that's okay too.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm very much in favor of the 3-point revolution and all that. And 3 points is worth more than 2 points, but 2 points is worth more than zero.
Right.
And that matters because you have to be able to put points on the board no matter how it's going to come. You have to find a way to score.
Yeah. I do assume there'll be somewhat of a 3-point bounce back for all those teams, but I don't know. I could see a team that gets knocked off in the first round, we're going to look, and it's going to be like 3 games into the series, and they've made like 11 threes on like 100 attempts.
Sounds very Minnesota Timberwolves-esque, does it not?
Right.
That sounds exactly the way the Wolves would lose a series as a higher-seeded team.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Of the playoff series that we've seen so far, and we've seen at least one game in every series, 2 games in a couple series, which one are you the least interested?
Well, geez, that Bucks-Pistons game was terrible.
That was one of the most unwatchable playoff games I've ever seen.
A couple of my friends I watched with who are Milwaukee Bucks fans from Wisconsin, and you know, the Blake Griffin news came out right before the game that he wasn't going to play, and the spread, like, moved up to minus 15. And I think there's the same odds of the Bucks winning by 40 as there is of the Pistons keeping it within 15.
Do you think the Bucks win a game in that series by less than 25 points?
Yeah, probably.
I'm not so sure.
Just because
maybe game like three when they go home okay, and how get about this? Home they, crowd energy, but
they get a 25-point lead in every game.
Oh, without question. I would be stunned if they don't. I mean, well, you're right, because maybe garbage
back.
Time.
If Blake comes back.
They get a 20-point lead in every game.
I don't know.
Like,
yeah.
Yes, Blake Griffin is a difference maker in most cases, mm-hmm. but Blake Griffin is not making a difference in this series.
No Blake. That will probably be a sweep, and I think they'll win every game by 20-plus.
It's just so unwatchable.
I wonder what the spread will be if Blake's out again for
game two.
What is that game? Is that Wednesday? Yeah, I don't know. Did you say the least watchable? Was that the question or most? Yes.
Least interesting.
Well.
Because that one's up there, and I kind of expected that to be the answer. And I've got to know. I'm not really interested in Boston, Indiana. I think what I saw in game one was enough. And granted, what Indiana did in the third quarter where they just couldn't buy a bucket. I mean, I think they missed their first 12 shots, and their first make was actually a shot that didn't go in because it was goaltending, which is hilarious to think about. But I can't see that series really changing off of what game one was.
So here's my thing on that series is that, and I understand the vast majority of people were not watching the first half of that game because Tiger was going.
Count me in. Yeah. Sunday was amazing with Tiger Woods. That was incredible.
I'm not ripping on you or anyone else for not watching that game. But in the first half of that game, Indiana looked like a team that was going to make the series competitive. They were finding ways to make shots, and mm-hmm. they were defending at their similar that their Pacers level. I do think that they will get at least one victory.
I think it's a five-game series, but I know
I wouldn't be shocked if it goes six. I really wouldn't. I mean, the third quarter was such a departure from what the first half was.
How much of that was Boston didn't have energy in the first half, and they kind of found it at halftime? Because it seemed like Boston really just sleptwalked through that first half, which was a big reason. I mean, yes, you give credit to Indiana for one, making shots, and two, defending at a high level, which they did both of those. But I think Boston kind of woke up at halftime, and we saw the team we saw in the second half mm-hmm. from Boston is more so the team we're going to see than the one we saw in the first half.
I guess I'm just like numb at this point to like Boston having flat quarters or halves. Like it's almost part of their identity. Like that just happens all the time. So yes, you're right. They didn't come out like fully charged, but that happens all the time with the Celtics. And they don't have Marcus Smart, who is an energy person mm-hmm. for them. Like I a month ago, I might have picked Indiana in this series, but now, I mean, they've fallen off a bunch. And even with Smart out, I don't think that the Pacers are going to come back and win this series like at all. But there have been times this year where Indiana really gets rolling. If they can get Bogdanovich to be scoring at a high level and find their buckets off of turnovers and off of just playing solid defense, like we talk a lot about the Sixers being like emotionally fragile. Like the Celtics are that too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They're not a mentally strong team, but with that said, they've got one player where he thrives under chaos.
Yeah.
And that's why I would trust them in any scenario that involves chaos. Not because they're a mentally tough team, but because Kyrie Irving plays his best when everything just goes haywire.
Is San Antonio your most likely upset?
Yes.
We're recording this basically just after game one. Sorry.
It is Tuesday, April 16th at 3:10 Central Time as we're talking on the mics right now, just for some context here.
Central Time.
Yes. That's where we're at. 4:10 Eastern Time, yes. 2:10 Mountain Time, 1:10 yes. Pacific Time. Not sure what it is in Hawaii, but hello out there in Honolulu if you're listening.
Any of the other series? I mean, any Orlando?
No I'm shot, not. I'm no, not worried like about that. Toronto because there are two things that I've always judged with the Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
One, summer officially begins when LeBron eliminates them. So I'm going to be really confused about when summer actually starts this year. And spring officially begins when they lose a game one. So the only thing that happened on Saturday was spring officially started. And the weather kind of turned. The snow started to melt here in Minneapolis. It was another game one where that franchise has had so many issues in game ones. I can't bring myself to read into it much more than that.
Yeah, it was. Orlando played really well, and credit to them, they're just not that good.
Yeah,
and
you can't expect that from DJ Augustin every game in the
which
playoffs.
Was awesome. I mean,
it was great
Vucevic,
to see,
but Vucevic didn't do much of anything, and that part of that is the Toronto's defensive scheme. I thought Gasol did a really mm-hmm. good job on him, but I do think you get more. I think that series and by in, I was going to say could get interesting, and by interesting I mean I could see Orlando winning a couple games.
Yeah.
In the series, maybe two, and it goes six, but it does seem like through one game that I'm with you. I think Denver is probably the most on watch.
And I picked San Antonio to win the series in six prior to it. I was just not confident in the Nuggets, and I thought if there was going to be an upset, that's where it was going to be. That's kind of why I went with them. And
right.
To see the Spurs get a game on the road that they really didn't, I don't want to say they didn't play better than Denver, but it wasn't as if they just destroyed Denver.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a big deal because now they've got home court and Denver hasn't proven that they can play very well on the road. They had the best home record in the NBA, and when you only win 54 games but have 30-some of them at home, that means that you didn't do too well away from the Mile High City.
I'm with you. I think it's the most likely upset at this point. I also still feel pretty confident that Denver is going to win that series. So I do think we enter the second round with chalk would be across the board. I feel confident in that, though. Again, this tonight's game, Denver San Antonio, will be a barometer for whether that, you know, because yeah, like you said, down 2-0 going to San Antonio, which is another place that the home team plays very well historically. Like, yeah, they got it. Yeah, they got just got to win game two.
Did you learn anything from the Houston Utah game one on Sunday night?
So I've had this like, for the past couple months, this like theory with Utah that they just run way too many pick and rolls.
Sure.
Which sounds weird because you're like, oh, that's great. And then you kick to the guy in the corner and you have open threes and all that. I just think it's they lack straight line penetrators other than Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you just, unless you have elite executors of the pick and roll, which I don't think they have.
Correct.
I think in time that ends up getting exposed. It's too much. Because as a defender, you know it's coming over and over, and you know how to be able to stop that. So it was weird. That was a bigger takeaway for me, was on actually the Utah offensive end when they went to Rubio so much. I mean, he took like, I don't know, 8 or 9 first half shots, something like that. And they weren't doing a good job of like feeding favors on the short roll and getting it to Korver, Ingles, or whoever in the corner. Like, I don't know. It confirmed a lot of what I had there, where I'm like, that team needs another creator. And then look at the other side of the ball. They have that.
Yeah.
And Harden, of course, the best.
Yeah. That, I mean, the absolute best one-on-one creator there is.
Do you think, but still before the series, I saw so many people picking Houston in 5, and I was like,
that's what my pick was.
And then Houston took care of them easily. I did think that series would go 6 or 7, but it was an uninspiring performance by Utah pretty much on both ends of the floor. And I think for them to win games, they're going to need to take advantage of their shooters. And they're going to, I mean, it can't be like Jay Crowder step back threes. You need to run the pick and roll, hit the roll man, and hit Korver in the corner. Like, you need to do that or you need to get dunks. And I don't think they can run that at effective enough of a level to be able to beat Houston. And but they will in one game. They'll have like a 45% shooting from three game.
And it'll happen.
Yeah.
And I think that what Utah wanted to do defensively against Harden, they don't have the personnel to do. They wanted to run what Milwaukee did against Houston in their two matchups. And I'm sorry, but Ricky Rubio is not nearly the same defender that Eric Bledsoe is. He's just not athletic enough. And there's a difference between forcing James Harden to go right, which Eric Bledsoe did, and letting James Harden go right, which Ricky Rubio did.
Well, and then it's just so underrated. It's the back end of that with the lob to Capella is, because then you have to have the guy come in from the weak side corner, and it leaves the weak side corner open. And then PJ Tucker hits three straight threes and you're like, well, what do we do? Like, Harden,
not
Capella,
that
you know, and it's just, they are the opposite of Utah, where they just have that high screen and roll, like, down to a T, because the weapons are so powerful. Like, apparently Capella was like sick in that game. Didn't look like it.
Yeah.
Like, that dude is all over the place. And
yeah, I think they said on the broadcast, like, he got like 2 hours of sleep. He was sick all night. And
did not look like it. He came out.
He outplayed Gobert by quite a bit.
Yeah, and that's Gobert who's trying to defend that lob. And they found him consistently. And then for Houston to lose, it's going to be because Tucker or
because they can't find the rim on outside shots. That's what it's going to be. They're not going if they lose a game in the series, it's going to be because they miss 30 plus three-pointers.
But if I'm them, I go, like, we need to come in harder. We need to, somebody got to put a body on Capella once Gobert has to commit to Harden. And then I said, Daniel House beat me from three.
Which, like, could very well happen.
It very well could happen. But it's, if you're going to do the weird, like, here, James, just go down the right side of the floor thing, you are welcoming that action to start.
Yeah.
And then I think you got to pick your poison between.
And I don't know that Utah's long enough on the wing to do that.
Yeah.
Because Milwaukee had success because they've got a rim defender in Brook Lopez, but they've also got probably the longest guy in the league in Giannis. Right. So that's how you can make up for that corner because
who,
you can get out
Giannis
there.
Who is Giannis guarding in those games?
They stick Giannis in the weak side corner.
Okay. That helps a lot.
Yeah. And because then you have Brook Lopez who can help to take away that lob, and their goal is essentially just to force James Harden to take as many floaters as possible, which he statistically did not have a great year doing. He was not good from floater range this year.
Well, compared to just being awesome everywhere else.
Yes, but exactly. Which, I mean, if you're going to have a knock, I suppose that's not a terrible one to have. But that was their goal, is to just force him to take as many floaters as possible, take away the lob with Brook Lopez, and take away the other corner with Giannis, and Utah does not have the personnel to do that.
Are you pretty firm on Milwaukee Golden State as the finals
this point? I don't have Milwaukee coming out of the East.
Still?
I've got Toronto, yeah. I am not deterred by a game one loss. They'll lose game one in every series, and they might still win the title.
Yeah, you bag on Toronto more than anybody.
Oh, because I've seen it, and part of me does want to see Toronto have success because they put together some, like, last year's team was a really good Toronto Raptors squad. They were really good. They won 59 freaking games. And then they run into LeBron and lose in four. Like, I feel a little bad for that. Like, I would like to see that organization have success. I like the way that they've developed players. I think that they do miss OG Anunoby, and I think that they would have loved to see him take more of a step this year and obviously not have an emergency appendectomy prior to the playoffs. But I like the way that they developed Pascal Siakam. You can't help but love that. And I really admire Masai for going out and trading their franchise player to upgrade that spot. And for some reason, they got Danny Green too. Like, think about that. They got Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard.
Well, and the Marc Gasol trade, I think, was good, too.
I admire them for going all in. I don't know that we see so many teams that want to hedge, that want to try and both protect the future and go for it right now, but kind of stick.
Right.
They're dipping a toe in the water for right now because we've seen the Boston Celtics do that for the past couple of years.
Right.
I really admire Toronto going all in and knowing that if it doesn't work right now, it might never work and it might be time to blow it up.
And that's why these playoffs are sweet, because you have numerous teams doing that. I mean, you obviously have Philly, who's their transactions in the middle of the season signal, you know, the same thing. And Houston's been doing this for years now. And
I admire that.
I do, too. I was on Milwaukee entering the playoffs, and I think game one of that series only further.
Oh, it didn't. the beatdown of the Pistons didn't deter you from picking the Bucks.
No,
I'm stunned, Dane.
I love what I've seen from that team all year, and if it's Boston that they get that series, I think will be a heck of a series.
I think nothing would surprise me with that series. If Boston found a way to beat them four times in 2 weeks, I would not be surprised.
Right.
Because I think Boston can present some very, very difficult matchups for the Bucks. And I don't know that missing Marcus Smart really kills that. If they had Marcus Smart, I would pick Boston for sure to win that. I would probably pick Boston in six games. Yeah. But now I'm very much on the fence. I am very much on the fence there.
I mean, as we said, before the playoffs started, like, the East is, it's just pretty awesome right now. Like, Philly bouncing back in game two after a stunning sort of defeat in game one. I mean, it's really easy to turn on the playoffs right now.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome.
Unless it's the Bucks.
I thought don't watch that series. Just save your, if you are allotted a certain amount of time to watch each team, save all of your Bucks time for later in the playoffs. Don't waste any of it on the Pistons. It is so bad and unwatchable. But I was really happy to see the Nets win that game, too, because I really, again, admire.
Shout out Jared Dudley.
Yeah, shout out Jared Dudley. Shout out all the Brooklyn Nets, man. I thought it was great to see just the way they've built, because they haven't had a lot of, they have not had their own draft pick since 2013. And for many of those years, they've been really terrible. Like, really terrible.
Yeah.
And to be able to build and get yourself back into the playoffs and win a game on the road in the playoffs, that's an accomplishment.
Absolutely.
They deserve a ton of credit for that, and I think that's awesome to see, too.
I got to think they win one at home, too.
I hope they do. I would love to see that series go 6 or 7.
And the longer it goes, the more time that is on Joel Embiid's weird knee. And
a better chance the Raptors have an easy second round.
Yeah,
easier second round.
If the Raptors get Brooklyn in the second round, that'll make that increases their champion or going to the championship odds by a lot. Yeah, I mean, again, it's been very easy for me to just kind of turn on the playoffs and just watch.
It's been great. Yeah. And unfortunately, it was too difficult for me to stay up last night and watch it all.
Well, you got to pick and choose. And that's the beauty of League Pass. It's worth it. You can turn it on, zip through that second half of that game, like, no commercials. It's great.
Yeah, it's the best. Dane, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, no problem.
This has been Raised by Wolves. Remember to like, rate, subscribe, review, do all those things on Apple Music, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. We'll be back on Thursday. It'll be myself and Rami Makhlouf as we continue to break down the NBA playoffs, as well as some Wolves front office news as it trickles in. So until next time, thanks for listening to Raised by Wolves.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning architectural shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save.